up from my nap. Not have another one.
Well, I that was more of a bummer than I remember it being, but anyway.
This is a linoleum knife.
It sure is.
And I'm Dave White of movies.com and also of
Slake Magazine, which has a new issue out.
Sleeping. I'm also of Sleeping.
And I'm Alonzo Duralde of therap.com.
Alonzo and the Flick. Party Rock Anthem, yes. Duralde.
We did not do a show last week, and that is entirely Dave White's fault, as it turns out. So I just wanted to be very upfront about that, that it is Dave White's fault that we did not do a show last week.
Whatever.
So we're going to make up for it this week. We have all...
There was a reason.
We're going to cover...
What was the reason?
Well, I was in Dallas. We were going to do it a day late.
That was the reason.
And then after that, it was all... we had planned to do it on a Monday, and you were like, oh, my God. And all week, you were like, oh, I got the blah, 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 blah. And so we didn't do a show. And it's all your fault.
I want the record to show that I do not speak like Paul of the Hillbilly Bears.
Paul?
we do this on Sunday. What's that noise?
Drag racing.
All right, okay. We do this on Sunday, you know, morning, Sunday afternoon, whenever we have time on Sunday.
And so if we miss Sunday, that just throws your whole week off?
Yes, it completely throws the week off. I can't do it on Monday.
Like, I had told you weeks in advance we were going to do it on Monday.
Mondays take, you know what I got to do on Monday? I got to write that column. I got to write that column on Monday. I got to go to the farmer's market on Monday.
And you didn't even go to the farmer's market
because we were going out of town.
Well, so that's not an excuse then.
Well, but then I had to go to the post office. A million things I have to do on Mondays.
Anyway, so we're very sorry. I know there are people out there who their whole Monday commute is based on listening to this show. And so we deprived you of that last week. And again, we're very sorry. And again, it's all Dave White's fault.
There are so many other podcasts out there that are...
Which I mention on a regular
basis. Better than ours.
No, stop. I do want to say thanks again to the guys at Secretly Timid who had me on when I was in Dallas. That was a lot of fun doing their show. And we also have a special guest this week, which we're very excited about. We were going to do this whole fancy Skype thing, but of course, I'm kind of technologically incompetent and couldn't figure out how to make it work. So we're going to do the next best thing, which is to hold the phone up by the microphone. So it'll be great.
Oh, there goes my biscuit.
Well, we'll be talking about Judi Dench and the whole concept of dunking later in the show. Anyway, joining us via telephone by Atlanta is one of my oldest friends in the world, also a film critic of no small esteem. He has written for Creative Loafing and Paste Magazine, among many others, and is the president of the Southeastern Film Critics Association. Please welcome Mr. Kurt Holman.
Well, thank you. Thanks for having me. It's a thrill to be here and be linoleum knife helicarrier.
You need to put that phone.
What?
It's very dangerous to have it on a helicarrier. Could it just fall out of the sky?
Doesn't his voice come out of the back of the phone?
It does come out of the back, which is how I was holding it. That's what I was doing, and you were all pointing and saying.
Make it go closer, then, so folks can hear it.
Yeah, he can. There, he's registering.
All right. All right.
Anyway, thank you for being here, Kurt.
Oh, it's a pleasure.
Especially on
Avengers weekend, of course.
Exactly.
It would be wrong if you and I didn't talk on Avengers weekend in some fashion.
No, I totally agree. Kurt, it was my my college enabler of getting me back into comics after I had successfully kicked the habit. So we're having him on this week to talk about The Avengers, which is the biggest movie ever of all time, which had a $200 million opening weekend domestically and is... burning down the wickets, as they say.
Yeah.
Who says burning down the wickets?
To a nicer guy, as far as the filmmaker Joss Whedon goes. You know, I mean, I don't know whether he's like nice in person or not, but he's someone who, like, in the way he like understands like movie action archetypes and gets knows how to make them funny, but without making them ridiculous. It's like he deserves a success like this. The way that someone like Michael Bay, you kind of like. Does he have to be so successful, you know?
No, I mean, this definitely feels like a movie that was written and directed by somebody who actually gets comic books, you know. Can you hear Dave, by the way?
Yeah, I cannot hear Dave as well, so.
All right, well, you'll have to speak up, Dave White.
Okay.
All right. What's a wicket?
I don't know. It's just it's one of those crazy variety speak things that I think they used to say, you know, that if a movie was doing boffo B.O., that it was, you know, burning down the wickets or something. That's where that expression comes from.
You guys are going to have a real good time this afternoon, though.
Kurt, you were saying?
How'd you guys like it? That's what I asked.
I had a blast. I mean, I have to say, I was a little skittish going in because I was not a big fan of the Thor or Captain America movies. And then the beginning of the movie, I was a little thrown off because, like, you know, there's the first big action sequence and it's kind of a mess, like, in terms of I'm always strict about, like, do I know where everybody is in relation to everybody else and what they're doing and why. And I felt like it was kind of messy. And then, like, did you notice this? The title card is kind of cheesy.
I did not notice that. I also was wondering if anyone actually says Avengers Assemble in the movie.
They don't. And apparently that was actually the subject of some discussion. But I thought that opening title card just looked really cheap and like the Roger Corman Fantastic Four, kind of not very well thought out. But then after that, it got great, and I thought it was really funny, and I was having a blast.
It was all a trick to get you into a false sense of, you know, of being afraid, and then, you know, it's like ha ha, we're acting into this awesome, you know.
That's true. We've tricked again. And Dave, non-comics reader?
I'm a non-comics reader. But I liked Thor. And I liked Captain America a lot, more than you, much more than you.
Yes, yeah, I remember.
And which means I'm right.
No.
And
never ever.
The other thing is that you have an old-fashioned person's idea of how things should look in a movie. Just because you can't tell what's happening on screen doesn't mean it's not a good time. Just because...
Oh, I'm too married to coherence?
Yeah, you are.
Sorry.
You're much too much of a stickler about who's hitting who and why and where. I don't think it matters so much sometimes. I think that
I think you're wrong in this case. I mean, it's like
thank you.
I want to send you guys an email once about the Transformers movies.
Yeah, I know. I love the Transformers
the last,
movies.
Like, 40 minutes of right. Transformers Dark of the Moon is
right.
Like a really awesome
fantastic
action scene. Like,
I know.
War in Chicago. And most of the other movies, the action scenes just look lousy, you know. And it's like, you can have a dumb movie that has good action in it. And so I think that there is a difference sometimes in this case.
I just want to feel like something ran over me.
See, because I do feel like that making a 3D movie sort of forced Michael Bay into like making some visuals that made sense. It wasn't, and not just a random assemblage of pixels, which is what Transformers 2 was. Mm-hmm. He's still terrible, but I, you know, 3 was at least an improvement and a step up, you know. But this movie, yeah, I mean, you're right. It's witty without it being too like elbow in the ribs or like to let's not take the material seriously, which is a fine balance to strike, you know. And I don't know, it just to me it feels like I got the rush from it that I got from when I used to read, you know, the Avengers, like when I would read like the, I don't know if it was the John Byrne era or so, like around issue 200-ish, you know. I used to like, I would read that book for the interplay between, like, you know, Beast and Wonder Man, you know, and for, you know, the Vision and, you know, his sort of, the Vision and Jarvis's conversations, and it's as much as for the, you know, like the Titanic, you know, universe battles or whatever. So, you know, I don't know, I liked the fact that there is a scene where they are, like, actually standing around a table and arguing with each other. I'm like, yes, this is the Avengers I signed on for.
There's more than
you
one of those.
That more than them actually, like, then the Hulk try and pick up Thor's hammer and be unable to do it because only Thor can pick up Thor's hammer, of course.
Right. Well, no, and the action stuff was great too, though. I mean, like, even, I mean, you know, I think that, I mean, what's great is that I think so much of it is character driven, you know, in terms of when they're fighting each other, certainly, and even at the end when they have to kind of figure out how to put aside their many differences and, like, actually be a cohesive, you know, team unit. I mean, when the big, you know, and there's always a big alien invasion at the end of these movies. When the big alien invasion happens, at first I just thought, okay, well, this is going to be like a Michael Bay movie only shot better. But no, it actually kind of felt like it was, I could feel the story threads all coming together and being taken somewhere and the character arcs being a part of it. And so it didn't just feel like another random, like, big action battle climax of the film kind of thing.
Yeah. There's something great about how, you know, they've been fighting so much before, and then you see them acting in concert in these, like, huge things that seem like one long shot where someone's on one building fighting and someone's on this other building fighting, and there's a third person and they're helping each other and all that. It's like a visual way of bringing all the kind of making all the sort of conflicts go away and showing them work together, you know?
Yeah, totally. And again, it's like, well, you know, that's a perfect example of what I'm talking about. It's an action scene where you know where everybody is in relation to everybody else, and that's what makes these things work. That's why it matters if this person on this block is doing this thing, and then that's going to affect how the other person on the other block is going to respond to it. That's how you make a great action sequence, is that you have all the players mapped out in your head, and so you see how what one person does impacts what's happening to everybody else.
Anyway, I don't want to feel like we're ganging up on Dave or anything like that, of course, you know.
I don't care what either one of you two say.
But you like the movie in any event, so that's all that matters. That's what matters.
Yeah, I cannot hear Dave very well, so I'll just wanted to let y'all know that, you know.
I said you're a big, ugly dummy.
One thing about the other Marvel movies until now was that they always kind of, in terms of how good they were, they reminded me of kind of the Star Trek movies with the original series from, like, Wrath of Khan through The Undiscovered Country, where most of them was like, most of the Marvel movies aren't as bad as, like, the fifth Star Trek movie, but none of them are that great, you know, so they're like, they're fun, they connect to each other, and I enjoy them, and it's like, I'm kind of waiting to see how the next one's going to be better, you know, and the Avengers is like, better than all of them except maybe Iron Man.
Yeah, this does kind of feel like the payoff. Like, it was worth sitting through all those origin stories so we could finally do this instead. Yeah. You know?
One of the things that's funny about it, too, is that it's just that how well it juggles all the characters, and they have, like, little arcs and moments of interaction and emotional connection or conflict. And I was remember thinking, it's like Robert Altman made a zillion-dollar, like, hero movie, you know.
Not a bad point. Hang on. Okay.
I agree with both of you nerd boners. But it's fun to just sit back and listen to you two get all about it, because it's a fantastic movie, and I don't think anyone who's even listening needs any of us to tell them that it's a fantastic movie.
No.
I think everyone just already went to see it. I mean, it made like a bajillions of dollars already this weekend.
Yeah.
What bums me out about it is that it just made me depressed about America's political future because it represents it really does represent this whole idea of an old-fashioned United States where it doesn't matter if people are radically different, though they see themselves as committed to this one important thing that we all agree on and we all need to fix, and no one agrees to that stuff anymore, and no one wants to give an inch to anybody anymore, and everyone's screaming at each other all the time now, and I don't think we're in any place to ever become like the actual Avengers now. When I walked out of the movie, I thought, well, that was good, you know, and I think, you know, if this were a movie made in the 40s, everyone would be like, yeah, let's go win World War II now, you know.
Are you saying Tony Stark is the 1%?
Go ahead.
I'm saying that that is exactly what I'm saying.
Go on, Kurt.
It's like, to extend the superhero geek metaphor, the times are now so polarized that the superhero movie for our zeitgeist might be The Dark Knight, and The Dark Knight Rises, where the hero is so isolated in his own kind of, like, lonely struggle kind of thing.
Right. And I just don't think you know, I like the idea that this movie is about people who have to become, you know, a community, and you have to help each other. And there's no, I don't think that exists right now in this country. And so I think that ultimately, not that the movie was about this, but it's kind of about this.
I, you and, know, I mean, call me idealistic. I would like to think that Occupy could be the sort of thing that
they make Saturday Night Live sketches out of.
Well, besides that, that the lesson that it could actually bring together like the Tea Party and progressives, because I think that if both sides have a common ground, it's that like we're being screwed over by larger interests than most of us are. And, you know, that there are shadowy figures that are manipulating everything. And, you know, it seems to me that, like, I don't know, what am I saying here?
I would speak, but I have a mouthful of biscuit.
Basically, the Koch brothers are Hydra. That's what I'm trying to say. You know? And I just think there's got to be some way where you can convince people on the right that, like, for all the things that we disagree about as far as social stuff and policy and whatever, that, you know, maybe we all think it's a bad idea that the Bush administration got away with illegally wiretapping us, you know, stuff like that. I think there's a common ground there. It's just we have to figure out a way to find it and to get past all the white noise of the people who are benefiting by the dissension in the ranks.
I want actual Hulk.
To smash.
I want actual Hulk to come smash. Because I just don't see. I am old school punk rock, and I believe that there's no future. And so because of that, I want Hulk and Thor and Captain America to come fix things, please. Especially Captain America. He's my favorite. Captain America is my favorite. Captain America doesn't have time to sit around making smart alecky remarks to people. He just wants to get the job done. And he's very nice. and so I like Captain America the best.
He is nice, to Jesus.
The end. That is everything I have to say about the Avengers.
I didn't know we were going to get into a conversation about this stuff, but okay. No,
It makes the movie seem so much more important now that Dave has presented his take on it. I'm excited.
I think every movie has to be about something besides what it is.
Sure.
I think every movie is about the thing it's about, and it's also about all the other things that are happening in the world, because the movie didn't get invented in a chamber of nothing. It got invented by people who live in the world right now. And the people who live in the world right now have things that they want. And what you want is the camaraderie of this kind of movie. You want the protection of this kind of movie. And we don't have that right now. And I think that this is a fantasy of wanting that. You know, it's also a fantasy about making buckets of money. I understand that it's also a big, you know, the business is, you know, that's the most number one thing, but
it's funny.
But I don't think about stuff like that because I'm not.
One of my Facebook friends said the other day,
technologically, we're not working.
Is there still any need for Comic-Con?
Well, that's
no.
Yeah, no, that's a fair point. I mean, they have become the establishment now.
Yeah, and that reminded me of something that I thought of when I was listening to y'all's podcasts when y'all were talking about Cabin in the Woods and whether or not Dave White is a fanboy.
Oh right, yeah.
No.
And you were suggesting that he might be one because he likes Game of Thrones and Fellowship of the Ring.
I just like those things because I'm awesome.
And then I was sending y'all a letter about this, and then the actual chance to talk about it came up. So I would say that I'm not sure that either Dave or you are fanboys. As someone who's probably a fanboy himself.
And why is that?
Yeah, I think the fanboys now and girls, of course, like in the Comic-Con sense, and the ones that movie studios are trying to appeal to are people who basically like, they're into probably like, you know, science fiction, fantasy, comic books, and probably video games on a level that's like immersive, so they like think about them like outside of the time when they're actually like reading them or looking at the movies or whatever.
Right.
And the things that they like have to be things that are kind of fantasy or unreal and can have like revenue streams around them. So it's like you can't be a fanboy for stuff like, on this level, for stuff like music or sports because they're too real, basically, you know.
So you have to be, you're a fanboy for like Call of Duty or Twilight?
Yeah, that's what I think, you know.
That makes
I don't think you guys are attached to anything that would like that could become a movie franchise very easily. So
that makes me a fanboy for Nigella Lawson. Because I think about her a lot.
Franchise, though.
What did he say?
Wait, say come again, Kurt.
Like a Nigella Lawson movie franchise.
Well, we keep writing letters to the studios, but they've been ignoring us so far. All right, well, listen, this is maybe awkwarder than I thought it was going to be, so I'm just going to end this now, because I really wanted to get you on the Avengers discussion, but we're going to do the rest of the show, and I swear to God, we're going to make this Skype thing work, and we're going to have you on for the whole thing, I promise.
Hey, could we pause now? Do the recommendations, and
yes.
Then you do your own later.
Yes.
Because I got some recommendations.
Yeah, let him do his recommendations.
By all means, yes.
Before we eject you.
Shoot.
I was thinking what would be a new video to recommend, and I've heard y'all recommend stuff that y'all haven't actually seen, so I figured that was good. And there's a film I haven't seen yet called The Innkeepers, and I don't know if y'all have mentioned it yet.
Oh, yeah.
A director named Ty West
right.
did the movie The House of the Devil, which is a really neat, moody horror film, and Ty West is in this kind of little group of sort of alt-horror filmmakers that make these movies that are real moody and unusual. And The Innkeepers is, as far as I No, it's about a couple of employees at this bed and breakfast that turns out to be haunted in an unusual way. And I don't want to know too much about it, so I can't repeat too much of the story, but it's supposed to be pretty good. And he's like a real interesting voice in, you know, horror and genre movies and stuff like that.
Yeah, we reviewed.
I would shout out to Sherlock, the new PBS show, the second season of which has probably started already by the time anyone's listening to this. But it's really awesome, and it's Sherlock brought up today for the 21st century with Benedict Cumberbatch as Sherlock Holmes and Martin Freeman, who plays Bilbo Baggins, the upcoming Hobbit movie, as Dr. Watson. And it's created by Steve Moffat, who's kind of like a British Joss Whedon, and that he's really ingenious at taking, you know, current archetypes for heroes and classic stuff and making them fresh and new.
Okay, cool. Yeah, we reviewed The Innkeepers when it came out. It's a really cool movie. We both liked it a lot.
We had a funny argument last week with a friend who hates it.
Oh yeah, that's true, and he's wrong. But anyway, yeah, you'll like it a lot, Kurt, I think. And yeah, I've seen an episode of the new Sherlock, and I dig it, and I'm very excited about seeing the new season too. So,
awesome.
All right, cool. Well, listen, thank you for coming on. And where can people find you online?
You can probably be to follow me on Twitter at Kurt_Holman, and that would probably be the best place for right now.
Awesome. That's CURT_HOLMAN. All right, Kurt, you're awesome. Thank you for coming on, and we'll talk to you soon.
Thanks, Lonzo. Thanks, Dave.
Bye.
Bye. Okay, we're still ironing out the kinks.
That wasn't ironing out a kink. That was just kink. That was just an entire kink.
Anyway, but it was great to get Kurt on to.
No, it'll talk be great Avengers. When Kurt actually gets to be on the show.
Yes, and we'll figure it out.
Because I worry that people didn't now hear anything that came out of that phone.
Mm-hmm.
And is there a way to pause it and test to see if we did?
But we could, but that would be so on us.
I know, but if we do this whole show.
Okay, all right. We're going to stop for a second, and then we're going to come right back.
Because if we do this whole show, and then it turns out that you can't hear anything he said.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Shh. Stopping now. And stopping. Okay, that worked. I told you it was going to work. We can hear it on the headphones, so obviously it was working.
Just because you can hear something on the headphones doesn't mean it's doing a thing.
Yes.
Well.
Meh.
So I think it's really funny that we had this, just last week we had that funny argument with
about the innkeepers.
With the innkeepers, with our friend who's wrong.
Yeah, so it's obviously in the ether, or maybe it just came out on DVD, I don't know.
Am I? No, it doesn't matter. So, where are we going next?
The best exotic Marigold Hotel.
Hooray. Here's the thing. I thought I was so cool and so original. I wrote my whole review as though this was the Avengers. I wrote my whole Best Exotic Marigold Hotel review as though it were the Avengers. And in fact, sort of touched on the things that I was just talking about, which I do not discuss really in my review of the Avengers.
The idea that there were a can-do people that can unite against a common foe.
Yeah, or that there's or that there's a community for you, you know, out there that will take care of you in a
right.
way. You that someone that something's going to rescue you, you know, when you need it.
Yeah,
because that's what Best Exotic Marigold Hotel is about.
Yeah,
it's about old people, you know,
given another chance,
given the opportunity to not, you know, be sad when they're old people. And so, so here I was thinking I was so cool, so funny, so awesome and original. Everybody in the world is being like, oh, this is the Avengers for old people, you know. So I'm a dummy.
Yeah, you gave it your best shot.
Yeah.
Penelope Wilton is the Hulk, you know. Yes.
She's more like, no, she is like the Hulk.
Yeah.
Yeah, Penelope Wilton is like the Hulk.
She's a rage machine.
She's the mean one, yeah.
So yeah, so it's an all-star cast of wrinkly Brits, Brits of a certain age. Judi Dench, Maggie Smith, Penelope Wilton, Bill Nighy, Tom Wilkinson, Celia Emery. I always think I'm forgetting somebody, but I guess that's all of them.
Who are the guys that you just said?
I said Bill Nighy and Tom Wilkinson.
And yeah, and the other one.
The other guy's name is. I've never heard of him before. He's got a great name, Norman Pickup.
Yeah, well, he's done a million British TV things.
TV shows, okay.
I mean, you go to his IMDb page.
No, I'm sure he's. Page, yeah.
He is like. He's been on. I think he's been on every show in England at least once.
he probably. If there was never a show called "What's All This Then," you know, there probably should have been, and he would have starred in it.
Right. So. Mostly what I just said in my review of this is that it's the platonic ideal of counter programming. Like, there's no thing left unaddressed in this movie in terms of the kind of film that you would go see if you don't care about the Avengers.
Right.
Or in fact if you just simply are into this kind of thing.
Sure. This is the kind of movie that, when we lived in Dallas, there was an art house theater there that's now, I drove by it, it's not an art house anymore, called the Inwood. And
it's not?
It's not.
What is it?
They were showing like 21 Jump Street and, you know, like mainstream-y stuff.
You're joking.
Well, because now there's the Angelica and the Magnolia.
There's no more Inwood?
Not as we remember it, no.
Oh.
Well, you know what? It was always kind of...
I liked it. That was my favorite place.
I still remember they had an upstairs balcony that they carved into two smaller theaters. I'm feeling a sense of loss
right now.
And I remember going to see John Sayles' Lone Star there, and when the title came up, it said One Star. It's like watching Saturday Night Live on our non-HD television. So yeah, I let it go. I have no fond. I've not. I mean, I have some fond memories of the Inwood, but I don't miss it as an art house. But anyway, so where was I even going?
I'm sad about
this?
The Inwood, and I'm sad about the fact that I just finished my cup of tea, and one of my biscuits is just gloop at the bottom of the cup now.
Can you read it and tell your fortune?
No.
Okay.
Those that would be leaves.
Right. Anyway.
And there's a part in this movie where...
Wait a minute. I was making a point here. The Inwood would get to it.
The
Inwood would get certain movies that would play forever. And especially like afternoon matinees.
A Room with a View.
Room with a View.
It wasn't
like,
for an entire year.
Yes. So like all those kind of Merchant Ivory movies, you know, the old ladies would come and see them in the afternoon just forever.
And me.
And Dave. And so I can totally see Best Exotic Marigold Hotel being the kind of movie that even after like the main run is over, that they still play it at like 2:30 and 5 every day.
That's right.
You know, because it is, I don't know if they do old people focus groups, but if they did, like
they do.
This movie would be through the roof.
I bet you they do old people's focus groups.
Yeah.
I'm sure. I bet you they do. And all the great old people are in this. All the great British old people are in this.
Yeah.
Maggie Smith and Judi Dench and Penelope Wilton. Those are like the three like ladies, you know. There's a scene in this movie where Judi Dench talks about how to dunk a biscuit in tea, which is odd because the movie at the beginning sets up the fact that it's Maggie Smith who's obsessed with the biscuits. Like she
smuggles chocolate hobnobs into India.
Into India. You know they carry. You know they sell chocolate hobnobs in India.
Oh, I'm sure.
It was a colony.
Yeah.
So we're not
it's one of the final remnants.
We were a colony too, and you can get chocolate hobnobs here. True, yeah. I learned.
If kids in the street play cricket, you can get a chocolate hobnob in Jaipur.
She talks about how to perfectly dunk a biscuit in your tea, and I failed.
Yeah, I was going to say that
I'm usually really good.
That was almost a setup the way you did it.
I know. It really was strange that life imitated art there, but I'm really good at dunking my biscuits in the tea. Like, I know exactly
when to pull out.
I know exactly when to take it out of the tea before it falls apart.
Not today, you didn't.
And today I failed. Well, you were distracting me with the phone and the thing and the Skype and the problems and
someone else's phone.
Avengers and stuff. I wasn't in the zone.
Blame the Avengers for your mushy cookie.
And this is a real good one too. Is those ginger biscuits that you get at Whole Foods. And so,
anyway, Best Exotic Marigold Hotel.
This movie really is like the Avengers because it's about people that don't have much in common coming together and having to really all sort of like accomplish the same task. You know, make life not suck.
Yeah.
And there's very little, colonialist kind of stuff in it.
Thankfully,
There's not, Dev Patel's character is super, like, ingratiating to them because he, runs the hotel and he wants everything to be right.
It's that sort of charming, small-time con man character you've seen in a lot of these movies. That sort of Zorba,
But the movie doesn't... Dreams. He doesn't exist to help them with their problems.
No.
He's got his own storyline
with
his own girlfriend. And it's interesting because the storyline with him and his girlfriend is very much about, well, what do young people in India have to contend with now?
Right.
You get these old people.
The generational differences.
Old people are having to deal with their stuff, and young people are having to deal with this new paradigm of, the
world, modern economy.
The world has come to India, and are you going to get sucked up in that, and go work for the big corporation that puts you at a call center so that people from England and America can yell at you all day.
Because their cable is out.
Yeah. Or what do you do? And so I like that they gave him his own thing.
Yeah.
And he wasn't just there to be like, oh, Maggie Smith, allow me to help you, with this thing that you have a problem with.
If anything, actually, the white people wind up helping him out. Which is kind of interesting.
Right.
It's like, this movie is as hokey as the day is long in a lot of ways, but this cast is pro enough to like treat it like Shakespeare, and make it fun and compelling and funny and just a lot of, it's really entertaining to watch, it's just fun to watch these people do this thing.
Right.
It's funny. Like somebody asked me afterwards, like, "Well, does it make you want to go to India?"
No.
But at the same time, it makes India a little like less forbidding than, say, The Amazing Race does.
All you have to do,
which always it portrays it as this just like kind of teeming, loud cacophony of
just
.
Watch An Idiot Abroad. You'll know that you don't want to go to India, other than just as a very, very sort of sheltered tourist. You don't want to go.
You want to go from the resort to the Taj Mahal and back. Is that what you're saying?
Right. You want to be on a package tour where, you don't have to experience. Like, did you see the documentary Born into Brothels?
Yes.
It's devastating.
Yes.
It's just a devastating movie.
But that's like judging the United States by, Harlan County, USA or something.
Well, the United States is Harlan County, USA.
Well, not all of it.
Well,
all the
lots
time.
Of it. Lots of it. The thing is that if you go to another country for any kind of reason, unless you are sort of being sheltered by your, hosts, you're going to encounter, ugliness. And there's so much crushing, devastating poverty there.
Yes, well,
That I have a good friend of mine from college lived there for a year as a nurse, and she came back and she said, "It's amazing and also like heartbreaking every single day." Mm. And so, if I'm gonna grow, getting back to the subject of getting old and being a retiree,
right?
Don't you want to go to some place that's nice and not jarring and comfy? And I know that's the point of the film. But in real life, if someone uprooted me at age 70 and said, you're going to Jaipur, I'd say, just kill me now. Like, if I'm 70 years old and I'm traveling somewhere, let's make it be to, you know...
Western Europe.
Let's make it be to Florence so I can see lots of, you know, frescoes and have nice little meals.
I could take long walks and not have a million eight-year-olds come running at me for change.
If you're really old, like, I'm a youngish person still, so like I could go to India and see the things I need to see and experience the things I need to experience. I think without it making me feel overwhelmed. And, like, especially if someone said, oh, yeah, by the way, you're going to live here now. I think the older you get, the more you want the comfort. You want the familiar.
But, I mean, I think part of the point of the movie is that, and again, this is, like, I point out in my review, there's sort of, it's an ongoing thing, like Room with a View and Enchanted April.
Right.
That for the British, especially, they have to leave Britain to, like, you know, unbutton that top button and, you know, get a little crazy. You know, and that's sort of the point.
As long as it wasn't so hot. That's really what... I think that's what it really boils
down
to.
You complained about being uprooted when I uprooted you at the age of 35.
35.
So, yeah, that.
Maybe if it wasn't so hot, then maybe England, India wouldn't be so bad.
Right.
Now, if you uprooted me and said, you're going to England... You know, where it's a nice 45 degrees all year
and constantly
long.
Damp.
All year long and constantly raining, I'd think, great. That's the precise temperature I need to preserve me well into old age.
All right, I'm gonna pause us again.
Oh, we're pausing again?
And we'll be right back.
This is great. This is like doing it in little chunks. We should do this all the time.
Don't get too used to it. All right, hold on.
Oh, we're back now. Yes. Okay.
What?
In the little break, he was saying, what else did we review? And I was like, a little bit of heaven. So I just pulled up my review. And there are two comments.
Oh, boy. This will be good.
There are two comments underneath the review.
Tell me, no one is defending this movie, are they?
No. By the way, this is a movie. I'll explain. Well, first of all, this is a really crappy movie.
Oh, the worst.
On movies.com, I gave it 0 stars.
Mm.
And I know the star thing we've discussed, my problem with it, but it really deserves.
But it's worth it when you get to give something
it's
0.
Worth it when you get to get, yeah. The star system is only good when I'm allowed to give something 0 number of stars.
It's like tipping is only valuable when you get to insult a waiter with pennies because they were so bad.
Here are the two comments. This movie sounds horrendous. Here's the other comment. I watched it last year in February. Obviously, some screening
or
something.
Floating around, I guess.
It's worse than you say. You will not get past the first 15 minutes.
In my review, I called it awful and plodding, and film critic Wade Major on Facebook told me that I was being too kind. There's so many bad ideas.
I would like
put into a blender.
I believe every once in a while you get to see a film that your jaw is just open the entire time. You can't believe that, and we've discussed this before. You can't believe that
anybody thought it was a good idea.
Anyone thought it was a good idea, or that while they were watching the dailies. People thought to themselves, yes.
It's kind of like... Okay,
this is awesome.
Remember,
we're doing great.
Remember that horrible show on Extras that was basically like what The Office would have looked like if Ricky Gervais had listened to Network Notes?
The Are You Having a Laugh?
Yeah, When the Whistle Blows, is that what it was called?
Yeah.
This movie feels like the product of a million meetings.
But it's not. It's some kind of... you know, it's like
no. It's an indie. I mean, yeah, this was actually one person's terrible idea, yeah. But it feels like the kind of thing.
Well, the Weinsteins did get a hold of it.
Yes, but it, that's true. Don't they chop everything? Pieces? Yes.
Yeah.
It feels like the product of a lot of meddling hands and people saying, "What if she had a dog? You know,
what if she had a swing in her kitchen?
Yeah,
what if we made sure that everyone knew immediately that the gay best friend was gay without you ever having to say the word gay? Like,
we'll put him in a pair of black bikini briefs,
yeah, and then later we'll have him in pink flowery shirts and a purple pork pie hat. You know, like it's just so." Everything about this movie. Okay, it stars Kate.
It stars Kate Hudson. Stop right there.
Stars Kate Hudson. I'm gonna explain this movie. It stars Kate Hudson as a really free spirited ad exec.
Yes.
Who gets a giant promotion in the first 5 minutes of the movie
with the dumbest pitch you've ever heard,
with an idiotic pitch about women buying condoms.
Yes.
And she's so like. You know, she's so saucy with the visiting condom representatives clients. that they're like, this woman's amazing. Make her the president of everything. So she becomes the president of all advertising
of New Orleans, where she has a charming courtyard apartment.
Yeah, with a swing in the
with
kitchen.
With a swing in the kitchen,
and she then she goes to the doctor.
She's got two best friends.
Oh, she has two best friends.
The kooky one and the mommy one.
Right. She has a kooky best friend. Well, she has three best friends. She has
the
Lucy,
kooky one,
Lucy
the mommy
Punch.
One, and the gay one. Yeah.
Lucy Punch is her coworker best friend.
Right.
Who's all wacky.
Yes.
And Lucy Punch is British and really cool in all the things that she's in, except this, and is always better than the thing that she's in.
She was in The Tall Dark Stranger. Right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so
that not good Woody Allen.
Rosemary DeWitt from Mad Men and Rachel Getting Married. She's the mommy best friend. She's pregnant and going to have a baby.
And she's already got a kid.
And then Romany Malco from Think Like a Man.
And 40-year-old virgin.
He's the gay best friend.
Yes.
Who's
a chef.
Who prances about in skimpy thongs.
And pastels.
And pastels. And it made me think about the Patton Oswalt bit where he talks about how he went and auditioned for the gay best friend.
Right.
And he said, I will only play this character if I can make him be a complete idiot who never has anything, you know, right to say. Like, instead of like, we need apple teenies and microwave popcorn, stat. You know, like,
exactly.
And he's like,
shoe shopping time.
Oh, honey, let me tell you. Like, and then Romany Malco came in and said, you want me to do all that stupid stuff? Sure.
I'm in.
Whatever you want. I just want to work. I'll just be.
And there's a big drooly bulldog.
The bulldog's great.
So the setup is basically like if you were doing a parody version of like every awful Katherine Heigl movie, you know, you've got, it's all there. The wacky best friend, the gay guy, the dog. Kate Hudson, you know.
Gets colon cancer.
Bum, bum, bum.
Colon cancer. She gets colon cancer. And the minute she gets colon cancer, she flies up to heaven.
No, while she's knocked out for her colonoscopy.
Same thing.
She flies up to heaven.
Whatever. Don't pick nits with me on this movie.
Get it right.
God
knows the movie didn't.
The
where she meets God.
She meets God, who is Whoopi Goldberg.
And not just played by Whoopi Goldberg. It's mentioned in the dialogue that God is appearing as Whoopi Goldberg.
Right. And like God does in all known information that people have about God.
Yeah, like that kid that wrote the book about dying and coming back.
Yeah. God grants you three wishes.
Of course.
Like the genie in Aladdin.
Right.
And so Kate Hudson being at the top of her game professionally. Full of ideas and really smart.
Yes. Knows how to make a pitch.
Getting things accomplished goes, I want to fly. You're like, okay, great. You just wasted one of your stupid wishes, you dummy. And then she says, I want $1 million. And then wish number two, gone.
Mm-hmm.
And then God knows what wish number three is.
Yeah, God already knows what wish number three is. So apparently there's no chance left on earth for Kate Hudson to say, how about you make me not die of cancer? Yeah.
How about the colon cancer? Well, here's the thing, though. But, you know, if she'd wish for the colon cancer to go away, then she would have come back to earth and gotten hit by a bus in like 10 seconds. That's how those things always work.
No.
God's a trickster.
No, God is a God is a margarine commercial in this movie.
Totally.
And so
Whoopi Goldberg, incidentally, I just want to throw out there, already played God once in It's a Very Merry Muppet Christmas Movie.
That's true.
And so enough with your delusions of grandeur, Whoopi Goldberg.
The well, yeah, she gets three wishes, and one of them never is, please make me not die. And throughout the movie, Kate Hudson takes this very sort of like cavalier approach to her own death. It's just this sort of like, you know, yeah, I'm going to die. I'm just going to reject all the clinical trials and the treatments and everything.
Well, she goes through a little bit of treatment, which, and of course, in a movie like this, she pukes once and maybe has a little less makeup on than usual, you know? But as with most, you know, pretty girl with cancer movies, she just gets more radiant as it goes along.
Right.
And yes, at one point she's on a clinical trial and then decides she's just going to quit because,
So then her friends, like you do, they send a prostitute to her house.
Yes, a little person prostitute.
It's Peter Dinklage.
Peter Dinklage.
And
deserves way better.
And he says Peter Dinklage deserves the checks he gets.
I know, but he's too good for this.
Well, no, here's the thing. Peter Dinklage's rule, that I read an interview with him,
mm-hmm.
he basically said his rule was, I'm never playing one of Santa's elves. I'm never playing one of the seven dwarves.
Mm-hmm.
I'm never doing any of that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So this fits his rule.
That and they met his quote.
And he's not, he's not an idiot. He's like, oh, you want me to play a prostitute whose nickname is title, a little bit of heaven.
I was going
to
say, he plays the title role of this film.
And how long did he work? A day?
Okay. I won't begrudge him the gig, but
it's
really.
Not his problem that the movie's garbage. He just wanted to be, he's even got his Game of Thrones hair in the in the bit. Like his name is a
but
little.
But with highlights.
No, that is his Game of Thrones
hair. Oh, the highlights too? Yeah. Really? Oh, okay. And I don't watch that show. Nerd.
I'm a fanboy.
No, you're not a fanboy.
I'm a fanboy
for. As Kurt has pointed out.
I'm a fanboy for Nigella Lawson.
Well, yes. Because you do think about her a lot. You've really got to stop writing that slash fiction.
And so.
Out of hand.
I forget what else happens in this movie except everything stupid.
Oh, well, we forgot to mention Gael Garcia Bernal as
He's the sexy oncologist who is her boyfriend.
Who has no time for a social life until he has time for a social life.
Right.
And they there's lots of montages of them laughing and running through the streets of New Orleans and going to a straight person's idea of what a gay bar looks like, where towering drag queens dance around them. And,
yeah, constantly. She says stuff to him like, come on, Doc, level with me. And
I'm really fun. It is our new go-to for when people come up to us and say, oh, I wish I had your job.
Someone said that to us last night.
Yes. So our new
we were at my last night we were in Albuquerque, New Mexico at my niece's wedding. And one of my sister-in-law's friends came up to us and said, oh, I've heard all about you guys, your movie critics. I really wish I had your job. And I was like, no, you don't. You don't want my job.
We did not tell her the plot of A Little Bit of Heaven, but we could have.
Though. We should have.
Yes. That would have scared her straight.
So here's my favorite thing. I'm just going to tell you how it ends. The minute Gael Garcia Bernal says, I love you, too. And I've done in my review on movies.com, I also spoil the heck out of this movie.
And why not?
And if you, I seriously, you don't care. Like I encourage you really. It's on demand right now. So if it's not playing in a theater near you, you could buy this movie for $10 off of Amazon. It's playing on demand right now on home video. Also while it's playing, you know, theatrically.
Right.
It's so awful that you might want to watch it with enough friends and enough alcohol. Maybe. You know, you got the right people. If the right people are coming over to your house,
I don't know.
If you've got the right crew at your house,
I mean, the right crew can make anything worth sitting through. But
Oh man, this.
So
is,
here's how it ends.
I am reluctant to.
You don't care.
Sign off on this.
You don't
one.
Care if I know. You don't care if you know. Here's how it ends. Gail Garcia Bernal finally says to her, "I love you." Simultaneously, the pregnant friend gives birth, and Kate dies. The minute he says, "I love you," she conks out dead, and the pregnant friend gives birth in the same hospital. Which is, if you've watched enough 90s music videos, the plot of the live song Lightning Crashes. In the Lightning Crashes video.
I have not seen that one. But
in the Lightning Crashes video, the baby born somewhere else in the hospital gets the spirit of the dying lady. Mm. And the bald dude in live goes, ah! He makes that face, that scowly, crazy. This was an Edvard Munch, The Scream kind of face that the guy from Live always makes when he sings.
Well, that would explain why babies scream so much, because if I finally get to die...
And you get Kate Hudson stuck inside you?
Yes! I mean, no. I mean, like, seriously, like, you know, after all of my time on Earth, and I'm finally, you know, ready to face oblivion, and then I suddenly open my eyes, and I'm a baby again, it's like... Come on!
Not only are you a
not
baby,
fair.
Not only are you a baby, but you're Kate Hudson. You're a baby that got
take Kate Hudson
into.
Out of this proposition.
I don't
talking
think
about,
you should take Kate
I'm
Hudson
saying
out of
me.
It.
That's why. Like if I had to be reborn, it would just be anyway.
So okay, so she's dead.
Yes,
it's not over yet.
Oh yeah, that's true.
Then
there's
she
more.
Goes.
She had already planned with her mother, Kathy Bates.
Right.
Which I love the idea of Goldie Hawn going. They got who to play your mother? She and Kathy Bates had already planned her own funeral, which she wanted to be a celebration.
Don't say it mockingly. We've had this discussion, you and me, recently, where you want the same
thing. I don't want a celebration.
You said.
No, I want a boozy wake. It's different.
The words, I want a chocolate fountain.
Well, that too.
Were a part of it. Well, what does that mean?
You can have a boozy wake with a chocolate fountain.
That becomes a party.
But there's okay.
That becomes a Dixieland jazz band party.
No.
Just like
I
in
do
this
not.
Movie.
That's what the movie has.
You might as
I
well go rent
that.
A gazebo like they
no,
do in this
no,
movie.
No. Yeah. There are a lot. There are distinctions.
Big giant.
Clearly,
gazebo
I have to
park.
Start writing out plans for you.
You're
going to
have to write
distinguish
a very specific
things.
Living will.
Yeah.
For this event, because here's what happens
you
in,
don't
the
know the in the movie. The Kate Hudson
in the movie,
version of this.
Big gazebo in the park.
And everyone's wearing pastels.
There's a jazz band playing, you know, when the Saints go marching in or something. I don't know what they're saying.
Well, it's funny. Like, I mean, this movie acts like she's invented the idea of an upbeat funeral. It's like you live in New Orleans.
All the drag queens from the gay bar are there.
And a lot of black ladies with umbrellas with those banners coming
everyone's
off of them.
Everyone's dancing around, streamers
This is a regular funeral in New Orleans. Orleans. They invented the whole thing of like the somber music, and then as soon as the body gets planted, boom!
The drag queens too?
No, the drag queens are optional. But it's the New Orleans jazz funeral is a thing. And this
I know,
but this movie treats it like it took genius ad exec Kate Hudson to come up with it.
I know. Kate dances along
in her very white lady way.
She dances along on the other bank, on the other side of a little tiny
lake,
little tributary that runs between. Somehow there's a river in the park, and
well, they're on the water in New Orleans, you know.
And
you may have heard that they are. There's some levees there.
It's
perhaps
you've
heard.
Symbolic.
Yes, and Whoopi Goldberg
there,
is on
and
the
they
sofa.
Have little cocktails with the umbrellas, and Whoopi's having one with Kate and. All right, you said chocolate fountain. You said chocolate fountain, and you said party. Now what that means is...
I want a celebration
no,
of my
no,
life.
No.
Yeah, well,
no.
Figure it out. Figure out what you want. I know what I want.
Here's the thing. I don't want a big, stone-cold bummer of a thing. I want...
That's what I want.
I know, you do. I want people to get drunk and be forced to listen to my old mixtapes. You want me to hire professional
Oh, so you
mourners.
Do want it to be a stone-cold bummer.
So funny.
That was a burn.
So funny, Dave.
That was a super burn.
Well, if you want people to wail and gnash their teeth, we'll play your mixtapes. Zing.
I want everybody wearing black.
You want keening.
I want it to rain. If you could arrange that, please. Everyone has to be having a. I want no.
You want Ashes and Sackcloth.
I want
Diamanda Galas singing Gloomy Sunday.
I want Diamanda Galas singing Gloomy Sunday. I want umbrellas. All I want those to be black too. No, you know, sunny sky umbrellas. No cute. You know, Pochaco energy umbrellas. No.
You want the D.H. Lawrence Sons and Lovers funeral. Yes, I got it.
I want everyone to wear a black armband for how many months? At a certain point, you're allowed to all go into half mourning.
Yeah, this is not Downton Abbey. You do not get to dictate.
There will be a period of
you
half
get
mourning.
The day, and that's it. Beyond that, everybody's
now. I expect you to participate in my plan here.
Oh, really?
Yeah, you will be.
My plan is to cash out your life insurance and go to Bali with a porn star. That's my plan for your demise. How you like me now?
Yeah,
take that, Best Exotic Marigold Hotel.
Yeah, I want sorrow. I don't like the idea of, you know, turning. I mean, you only get one funeral. It might as well be super sad, right? Everyone should be sad that you're gone. Not, oh, he was so great. Let's play ABBA songs and dance. You know, no. Be sad. Be sad and eat some food, and be sad some more, and then cry. You better cry. I want a lot of crying.
Well, I do too. That's why I want a boozy wake. That's what. What makes people cry more than getting a couple of stiff drinks in them?
I don't know.
They get sloshy and sentimental.
Let them drink their own bitter tears. That's what they can drink.
Of Petra von Kant.
Yes.
All right, let's talk about last week's movie since we show. Now, you are all wrong and stupid about the 5-year engagement, which you did not find nearly as funny as
apparently I am all wrong and stupid because this on our trip this past weekend. Mm-hmm. When I say this past weekend, I mean the one we just got home from the airport.
This morning.
No, not this morning.
This afternoon.
Like 90 minutes ago. I'm exhausted. That's why I had to have a big cup of tea because I was literally asleep on the couch as you were setting up the podcast. I'm terrified to fly in a plane, but I always make sure that I have two safety magazines with me. I need a magazine that's lots of pictures and things that are not, you don't have to read very much.
Mm-hmm.
Like In Touch or something like that. Like I got an issue of, don't be offended, Los Angeles Magazine, but I got a copy of Los Angeles Magazine.
Text is unchallenging.
They got a lot of pictures of food in Los Angeles Magazine. And so I really enjoy looking at that. But what I get before the flight, while I'm waiting for the flight, is the New Yorker. I do not allow myself to sit in the waiting area. I stand so that I'm extra tired because I really do have to sleep on the plane. I can't be engaged.
And you did this whole trip chem-free.
I did no Xanax for this trip. We flew to Albuquerque, New Mexico and back this weekend, and I was not on Xanax at all, which was... I think I'm kind of proud of myself, maybe a little bit.
It's a personal best, I think.
It is. But I will say that the fact that I was not super asleep for both flights, like I was only sort of asleep for both flights, was bothersome to me. Like the taking off, I'm supposed to be asleep on takeoff. I'm not supposed to be experiencing takeoff. Because takeoff is when I'm most afraid. Takeoff is when I'm terrified the most.
More than landing?
Oh, landings. No. I'm really into landing.
Oh.
Because every second the ground gets closer, and because you don't experience the speed of the plane while you're in the plane, it just feels like you're gently gliding toward the ground. Oh. And so I will actually open my window
and watch the landing.
And watch the ground get closer because I think, I'm 1 minute closer to not dying, you know, and so but taking off. I don't want to be awake for taking off. So I get into the New Yorker, and I make sure to read, like, two, like, heavy-duty things in the New Yorker before the flight so that I'm bored and asleep and ready to be having a nap. And I read the review of whoever the film critic is for the New Yorker.
David Denby.
Yeah. I read his review of the 5-year engagement, mm-hmm. and he loved it, like, more than you even.
Wow.
And I thought, oh wait, maybe I was being dumb about the 5-year engagement. I don't think I was being dumb. I still think it wasn't as funny as I wanted it to be.
Mm-hmm.
But it might be a better movie than I thought it was. Just in terms of, like, the things that I was annoyed by are a lot of the things that he felt were good about it. That's sort of like sort of overlong, sort of rambly, let's go off on all these other characters.
Somebody commented on my review where they basically said that, like, that Apatow movies only feel long the first time, and that when you see them again, you sort of revel in all the character stuff and extra things that he throws right. in. And I don't,
that might be true.
It may be, but that whole brings up the whole thing, like, should a movie exist to not be as good until you see it 2 or 3 times? You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
I guess. Okay.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. There are films that I've seen that...
Not that you can't get more out of a movie on repeated viewings.
When I first see it, I'll think, okay, yeah. You know, like, that makes sense to me. But there'll always be something about it, and maybe this is why this is a better movie than I thought, because there will always be something about a film like that that kind of nags at you
uh-huh.
a little bit to go back, and you think about it, and you want to go back and look at it again.
Sure.
And then you do go back and look at it again at some point in the future, and you think, oh, this is what I didn't see the first time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can't be expected... And this is why film criticism, the way it is practiced now, and the way we are, you know, stuck in it, just right. like everybody else, the idea of see it once, crank something out, have instant thoughts,
right.
put them down, get them online as fast as possible. We're going to show you the movie 2 days before it opens. You have right. no time to think. You have no time to
process.
No time to process. No time to see it again.
No, I remember feeling bad for the people who had to review the Tree of Life out of the Cannes Film Festival
immediately,
where they just literally had it, like, as soon as the lights came up, like, dash something off. It's like, ah, that's a movie you really got to let sit for a while.
I go back to this movie all the time, and I know people are tired of me talking about it, probably, but the first time I saw O Hussar Baltasar, like, I walked out, I was done watching it, and I thought, all right, I get it. The donkey was Jesus. Like, and that was the best I could give you. But it's so much more than that. And so, like, you see that movie again, and we're going to. It's field trip time.
Okay.
It's coming.
I want to see it.
They're showing it on the screen at the Arrow.
Yes.
We're going to get the group of people.
Like, you know, I mean, every Kubrick film, I think, you know, I get more out of the more times I see it, certainly. You know, even like, you know, Eyes Wide Shut, which is a movie that a lot of people... you know, don't like.
Kind of dismissed.
Yeah. I you know, looking at that again for the Christmas book, it was really like, oh,
I think it's
okay.
such a great
movie. Yeah, there's a lot going on in there.
Yeah.
So, yeah, no, anyway, 5-year engagement, I just think it's really, you know, I really liked Forgetting Sarah Marshall. I think that's one of the produced by Apatow films, by his sort of, you know, his circle of, I don't want to say acolytes, but, you know, his home team. I think it's kind of one of the richer emotional ones, you know, and I think this movie falls in that category as well. It's the same. It's Nicholas Stoller, who directs and he co-writes with Jason Segel, who stars right. in both films. And right. I think, I mean, like, I actually sort of, I remember comparing Forgetting Sarah Marshall to Romer, you know. And
well, all the Apatow movies are Romer-like in a way.
In one way or another, but I think...
Especially ones like Funny People and Knocked Up, but Funny People, especially Funny mm-hmm. People, which just goes on and on forever about all these different things.
But the thing is, you know, Romer isn't just people having long conversations.
I understand.
You know, I know, but I think that Forgetting Sarah Marshall very specifically deals with.
You can't see podcast people. I just made a face.
I know, but I just wanted to. I want to clarify for folks listening that I'm talking about it in terms of the vagaries of the human heart, you
Correct.
Know, and the sort of the kind of weird emotional
vagaries.
Vagaries.
I like it. I like it when you say big words.
and so, you know, I think that Stoller and Siegel really nail a lot of that stuff, and they do it again here in a lot of ways. And I think make me laugh at things in a way where you think, wow, who thought this was going to be funny? Because it is funny, but I mean, how do you think of this? I mean, there's a scene where Chris Pratt sings Cuckoo Roo Cuckoo Paloma and specifically sings the Caetano Veloso version.
That's actually a moment of very weird inspiration.
That is genius, because it's so...
That's one of my favorite moments in a movie this year.
Yeah, totally, because it's so earnest and so funny at the same time. And it's not... It's earnest, but it's not being mocked. But it is the earnestness that makes it so funny.
It is really, really, really funny, and it's really sweet and real.
Yeah,
and
genuine. It's
and he carries with him from other things that you've seen him on this aura of big dumb oaf.
Right.
That really sells that that as an unexpected thing from him.
Yeah.
If you watch enough Parks and Rec, he is like the quintessential dummy on that show. Like more than any other, like rivaling anyone on 30 Rock, in terms of American sitcoms right now, as like this like lovable idiot.
He's one of the great doofy on television right now, as they would say in Damsels in Distress.
Yeah, yeah. And so that, he's playing a version of that.
Right.
And he's smarter in this movie, but you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I'm willing to give 5-year engagement another chance.
Okay.
Here's the other thing that makes me think that it might be better than I thought it was initially. Nobody went to see it. It's a complete failure.
Yeah, no. Like, this is week two. It's tanking.
This is week two, and no one went to see it. And it's going to just die and leave theaters within the next 15 minutes. And
which is weird, because I don't, like, especially for a first weekend audience. I mean, the reviews were pretty good. I don't know.
Well, they were mixed.
I don't see, as far as how that movie was marketed and how it was described and what they were, the quantity they were selling, how it's that significantly different from Forgetting Sarah Marshall, which was a hit. I mean, in terms of, people like Jason Segel, from the Muppets
People might just have wedding fatigue.
Well, that's true. Yeah, the fact that they really were, from the people that brought you Bridesmaids, right. They were really kind of working that angle hard. Yeah. And it definitely, the marketing campaign is more wedding-y than the movie is, certainly.
The movie's not wedding-y at all.
Well, it's a little wedding-y.
At the beginning and at the end. That's it. But in the middle, it's all this other stuff.
Right. But the idea of their engagement and whether or not they're going to get married is a recurring thing.
I understand. But you know what I'm talking about.
Yes. But it's not Bridesmaids. But yeah, no, I hope more people check it out. Also, last week was...
The Raven.
I was spared. Tell us.
Oh, that's right. You didn't have to
go. I didn't go. Leah did that one for the rap, so I didn't go see it.
Oh, God. Edgar Allan Poe is... he wrote these stories, and they were really popular, but he's a jerk and poor and has to become a critic, which is, the most...
The worst thing ever.
...debasing thing that you can be. And,
And he's on the trail of a killer.
He's on the trail of a killer. I don't even want to talk about it. He's a series of 7-ish murders are being committed, all of them using his stories as,
blueprints.
Inspiration for, the deaths. And
is this really steampunk, this movie?
Not enough to satisfy the people who are really into steampunk.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. No, those people need, Jules Verne level kind of stuff. They I've met a few steampunk type people, and they don't, they're not easily mollified.
This is just some period gadding about.
Yeah, this is, yeah. Okay. And John Cusack. John Cusack is plays Edgar Allan Poe, and he's a jerk. He's like Sherlock Holmes. Like, it's very sort of awful Sherlock Holmes, Robert Downey Jr. Sherlock Holmes impersonation. Mm. There's nothing original about his, characterization. And the deaths are just stupid. Like, there's one that's based on the Pit and the Pendulum that's great because it's digital and, the pendulum just really sort of like swaps right through this guy. And here's how dumb the audience that I saw this movie with the night before it was released, because that's how
much, that's when they screened it.
That's
for
how much
local
they cared
press.
About this movie. The audience was all like, "Ew," and I was like, "No, the movie should be all this. The movie should be all
this is the one thing it's got.
This
going
is the
for
one
it.
Thing it's got going for it. The movie should be all." Really gory murders based on Edgar Allan Poe stories, not just like this one great set piece.
Is there and like then, a Cask of Amontillado thing where somebody gets buried alive?
Yes. Is there? And it's hilarious because she. It's
oh, because it's the yeah, girl, yeah, right.
It's John Cusack's disconcertingly young girlfriend.
Famous writers always get the, you know.
They always get the fresh.
They always get the grad students. Fresh young the grad, trim. The grad yeah. students.
And, She's stuck in the buried alive, and she's like, "Why are you doing this to me?" And the killer, who, by the way, when they finally tell you at the end who the killer is, you're like, "Who?" Like, what? Where did he come from? Like, there's no indication as the movie goes on that this guy is anything. Like, it's not even like they pull the camera out in his direction at all. It's pointless. And so she goes, "Why are you doing this to me?" And he goes, "Shut it." And here's what she says back. "Okay." My other favorite part.
God. Is there a Hop Frog murder where somebody gets covered with... tar and pitch and set on fire?
No.
Boo.
The there's another great funny moment where they get a band of people to go out and hunt for fresh masonry, which might be a suggestion that someone has been buried under this fresh masonry.
Oh, the new
they're
wall.
Looking for
yeah,
her.
Okay, right.
And someone goes, "This is not a good idea." And the other guy goes, "Well, what do you think we should do? Run about town shouting her name, you know, over and over?" And that's without one beat missing. John Cusack screams her name out into the world. Like, oh, yeah, that would be a great idea.
Let's try that.
And then he does it again and again and again. It's the worst. It's actually worse than
A Little Bit of Heaven.
Even though I gave it one half of one star. Because I just despised everything so much about it. And I allowed my history of the time I interviewed John Cusack to color, you know, to color my... Well, that color...
Short version, he was a jerk.
Every time I see a John Cusack movie, I cannot help but go back to that junket where I interviewed him, and he was such a jerk. I can't...
Ditto
like,
with
I can't,
Tommy,
I
the films of Tommy Lee Jones.
I can't lay that down, and I try really hard to lay it down, and it's why I'm glad I don't do junkets anymore.
Yeah.
Because when you do the junkets, you really learn what people are like. You really learn how gracious they are. Or how professional they are, or how like above it all they are.
Right.
And if you can be a super rich movie star and fulfill your contractual obligation to do the press junket and still be a decent human being while you're doing it, then you're all right.
Yeah.
But if you can't or you won't,
yeah,
then We're not gonna be friends. You know,
speaking
on
of,
any level ever.
Speaking of people who are cool with their public, reason we didn't do a show last week. I was in Dallas for the USA Film Festival,
right?
And one of the films I did a Q&A for was a movie called The Giant Mechanical Man, which is currently available on demand. You should totally stream it or
is
download
it in theaters?
It's in theaters in a few cities, but it's available everywhere
on demand.
Yeah.
Right.
And it stars Jenna Fischer from The Office and Chris Messina, and they're lovely.
Not Mark Ruffalo.
Chris Messina, the other Mark Ruffalo. Anyway, so Jenna Fischer came with Lee Kirk, who was her husband, who wrote and directed the film. And actually, they fell in love and got married in the process of making this movie.
Oh, really?
Like when this started, like, she just liked his script.
Right.
You know? Anyway, after the screening and after the Q&A, which they were a lot of fun to talk to, she signed every autograph,
right.
took every picture,
right.
like talked to everybody.
Right.
And people were like, okay, we need to, have to go to the reception and the thing. And she just stayed and did it. And it was right. like, and I was like, okay, that's how you do it, you know? Right. Especially because, like,
just you're... be nice.
Yeah, she's got this little movie, you know, right. that she... It's, like, it's her first time producing. She's really behind yeah. it, and obviously her husband made it, so clearly she's committed to this thing. And, like, that's how you... Every single person in that theater is going to leave and tell people, oh, God, I met Jenna Fischer. She was so great. Oh, and you should see her movie. It's really lovely. You know?
Right.
And, that, and no one left thinking, ugh, screw her, you know? They all loved her.
So anyway, this is a terrible movie, and yeah. and I unfortunately my lone experience with John Cusack, and you know what? Maybe he was just having a bad day.
I don't think so. Not from what I've heard.
Not from what I've heard. But I mean, like, I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt in my head.
Uh-huh.
That on the day I interviewed him, he was just having a bad day. But that doesn't make this movie. Any good.
Even if he'd been nice when you interviewed him, you'd still have hated this movie.
It would still be a big giant poop. But
because I mean, I it's not like I didn't like No Country for Old Men just because Tommy Lee Jones was mean to me once. You know?
I'll tell you about the Tommy Lee Jones.
Uh-huh.
I hate him for you because of how awful he was to you in yes. person, in front of an audience where yes. everyone, where everybody could watch. But here's what's so great for me personally about Tommy Lee Jones. He's never bad in a movie. Like, I always am into him in a movie. And
did you see the one where he had to coach the cheerleaders?
No, I didn't see that one. But the or maybe I did. Wait, what was that called?
I don't even remember.
You just threw me up. No Country for Old Men is such an amazing movie. And his performance is so great, and especially that final scene.
Yeah.
That just has haunted me to this day, that final scene of No Country for Old Men where he's just talking. After No Country for Old Men was over, I remember thinking to myself, wait, I hate Tommy Lee Jones because he was mean to Alonzo.
No,
and then I thought, I don't care.
That's the
he
thing.
He can be as mean to Alonzo as he wants as long as he's going to do that.
And I like him in The Valley of Ella, too.
Right.
You know?
That's also,
And it's like, oh, it's Tommy Lee Jones, stop making me like your work because I don't like you.
Stop being great on camera because I know that I don't like you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So,
well, I've decided that he can be a horrible human being and be mean to you as long as
he brings it.
As long as he brings it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Fair enough.
But John Cusack. John Cusack was not personally mean to me.
No.
He was just sort of not wanting to be at this junket. And, but I dislike him more for that because of the Raven.
That just adds to the whole thing.
Than I do anything Tommy Lee Jones did to you personally that I watched happen.
Fine. Also last week was the Pirates Band of Misfits.
Right. And after we finish talking about this, let's save the others. For later,
because
they're slow rolling out those other movies.
Okay, I don't even know.
Sound of My Voice and Bernie.
Oh, which right, which I haven't seen anyway.
And you
so,
need to
yeah.
see both of them.
Okay.
So you should see both of them, and then we'll talk about them later.
I will try. But anyway, Pirates Band of Misfits
And there's also Safe, which is about Jason Statham with a gun.
Yes.
So that's all that needs to be said about that.
And it's one of the good ones.
And it's fun. Yeah, it's funny. It shoots a whole lot of people.
Yes.
Like lots and lots and lots and mm-hmm. lots and lots of people.
Much mayhem in New York.
Right.
Hotels and restaurants and things.
Pirates Band of Misfits is really wonderful.
It was fun, yeah. I didn't like it as much as Arthur Christmas. I think it gets a little... out of hand at times.
Arthur Christmas is more moving. Arthur Christmas is more meaningful.
But it's also, I think, more focused storytelling in terms of...
This one's about Charles Darwin.
Yes, and Queen Victoria. Kung Fu Queen Victoria.
Parents, bring your kids to see the cartoon about Charles Darwin.
No, but it's a lot of fun. I liked it a lot. I think the Aardman studio consistently puts out really good stuff.
They are Pixar. They are Ghibli.
Yeah.
That's what they are.
Totally.
Yeah.
And this is right up there. And most fun I've had with a Hugh Grant performance in years.
Well, you know, 2 weeks' notice.
Well, yeah, but that was a while ago now. Lately, it's
2 weeks' notice is a crap movie.
But 2 weeks' notice falls in that category of I would watch it on
Look,
HBO.
You don't
if
have
I had
to sell
flu.
Me on 2 weeks' notice. It's got my lady in it.
Exactly, Sandy B.
It's a crap movie.
An HBO flu movie. But I mean, you know, he also did Did You Hear About the Morgans? You know, it's
I forgot about that.
Like words and music. What did that music was? Music and lyrics.
Oh, right? I forgot about Did You Hear About the Morgans?
Yeah.
That's the Raven of of comedies. Rom-coms set in the witness protection program.
And I'm sure it's no Madea's witness protection, which is coming out this summer.
Oh, I can't wait. Seriously, put Madea's name in a title, and I don't even care anymore that Tyler Perry won't show these films to the critics. Like, I love Madea so much.
He'll pay anyway.
I'll just pay and go.
Oh, and real quick, speaking of USA, I just wanted to kind of run down the other movies that I saw. The Dodecapentathlon, which is the next Duplass Brothers movie, which apparently they filmed in like 2008 and got backburnered because of Jonah and Jeff Who Lives at Home. It's coming out this summer. Right. Lots of fun, very funny, and they nail a lot of things about brother rivalries. I thought they got really right. And this actor who I interviewed in Dallas, Steve Zissus, I believe is his name. I always keep wanting to call him Steve Zissou because of The Life Aquatic, but it's Steve Zissus. And he was like the guy that Judy Greer almost cheats with in Jeff Who Lives at Home. He's been in a bunch of Duplass Brothers movies. He's apparently known them since like high school. He's very good in it. What else did I see? I got to interview Bert I. Gordon, which was a lot of fun. The guy who made, you know, The Amazing Colossal Man and Picture Mommy Dead and Tormented. He's had like 8 movies done on Mystery Science Theater. And I asked him about his whole MST thing, and he said, "Well, you know, he has a memoir out." And he said, "When they first approached him about writing one, he's like, oh, no, nobody cares about that." And then he went and made an appearance at like some horror convention,
right?
And he said, "Suddenly I realized I had 2 audiences. They're like the older people who remembered the movies when they came out and had been big fans,
right.
And then all these younger people who had seen like Sword and the Dragon on Mystery Science Theater, you know, Earth versus the Spider." So that gave him a whole new generation of people who knew about his stuff, and he was had a lot of great stories, and he was a hoot. I should have made a list anyway, but it was a lot of fun. I had a great time at the festival.
Are you saying that you're unprepared for this podcast today?
You know,
you've arrived unprepared.
I would have been prepared had we done this podcast a week ago like we were supposed to.
Look, I was really busy.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't have time.
Fine. What's your DVD pick?
I don't have one.
I do.
I'm half asleep. What is it? 4:15 p.m.?
Yes.
It's almost my bedtime.
Okay, fine.
Yeah.
My DVD pick this week is Danger Diabolik.
Then that's mine too. I love that movie.
In honor of MCA, who died this week.
Right.
How do you pronounce his last name? I've never heard it. Is it Yauch or Yauch?
I don't know.
Anyway, Adam of the BC Boys.
I never called him by his last name. I just always thought of him as MCA.
Exactly. Of the BC Boys passed away this week. And he not only, you know, was a part of this influential and very fun band.
And he was great.
He also was the founder of Oscilloscope Laboratories, who have released films like Wendy and Lucy and Meek's Cutoff. And anyway, a lot of really great indie art house stuff for the last couple of years. And so he, you know, had a lot of fingers and a lot of pies. And I mentioned Danger Diabolik because part of the reason that film managed to have a resurgence was because of the Beastie Boys Body Movin' video, which incorporates footage from that film and sort of shoots them as though they were in the movie. And if you get the DVD, that video is on the DVD.
It is such an awesome movie.
Yes.
Like, so much fun on every level.
Yeah, Dino De Laurentiis produced it right after Barbarella, and in fact, I think refurbished some of the Barbarella sets. It also stars John Philip Law, who's in Barbarella, but it's directed by Mario Bava. Is it Mario Bava or Dario Argento? I always get this confused. I want to say Mario Bava.
I've tuned out.
Whoever directed it, it's a lot of fun. It's based on a very popular Italian comic book about a master thief and cat burglar. And it's a crazy, crazy, entertaining, visually colorful,
yes,
wild movie with a really fun Ennio Morricone score. So anyway, check out Danger Diabolik. And so, yeah, so this brings us to the end of a lengthy episode.
How long did this go?
You don't want to know. Anyway, Real quick, as always, I want to remind folks, you can drop us a line at linoleumpodcast@gmail.com. We love your questions, comments, anything you want to tell us or share with us or ask us or whatever else.
Right.
You can like our Facebook page, the Linoleum Knife Podcast. You can follow us on Twitter, @linoleumcast. You can check into the show on Get Glue, although we're listed under TV for whatever reason. And if you like the show, and we hope you do, please tell your friends about it and link to us on your pages and leave us a review at iTunes. We've gotten quite a few and we appreciate all of them and they really help people find the show. So thank you for that. And if you haven't written one yet, please go do it at some point when it's convenient. We would appreciate it a lot. Want to remind folks to check out our friends at The Popcorn Mafia, The Comedy Couch with Dennis Hensley and Tony Tripoli, Blowhard, Fat Guys of the Movies, The Criterion Cast, The Showbiz Sandbox, Secretly Timid, again, had a blast doing their show last week, and Dave did their show about a month ago, so if you've never listened to them before, at least go check out our episodes. Our episodes, it'll give you a taste of the kind of stuff they do every week. It's a lot of fun.
It's real dirty, too.
That, too, yes. Not a clean podcast the way ours is. Also, Throwing Shade. I was listening to the new Throwing Shade on the plane coming back, and right. I had to hide my face because they did this, like, this phone, this, you know, ring-ring telephone bit that right. I was crying. I was laughing so hard. So really, check that show out.
That must have been great for the person sitting next to you.
Well, he was asleep, thank God. I would really embarrass myself. Team Jack and the Schmoes know. And also, if you are in Los Angeles, I've been programming a series for Outfest called Downtown 30, and it's at the Downtown Independent. And in May 23rd, we are presenting Nicholas Ray's deliciously Baroque Western, Johnny Guitar, starring Joan Crawford and Sterling Hayden and Mercedes McCambridge. And it is not currently available on DVD. So come check it out. There's more information at outfest.org. Is that it? Anything else, sir?
No. Good night.